Yhteistyössä Grafia sekä Arkkitehtuurimuseo ja Designmuseo.
Everyone knows Marimekko. And when I say Marimekko, you might be thinking about Unikko. This year we celebrate the 60th anniversary of the iconic pattern and its designer, the iconic designer Maija Isola. But who plans the party? And whose vision can we see in Marimekko's new products and actions? My guest today is the creative director of Marimekko, Rebecca Bay. This is Helsinki Design Weekly, and my name is Anni Korkman. And now you might have noticed that this episode is in English, but don't worry. There might be some Finnish words in between, as Helsinki Design Week is on, and my head is all around the place. Thank you anyway for joining us today. Welcome to Helsinki Design Weekly, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
I am really good. I think we are halfway into Helsinki Design Week today, yes?
Yes. yes, so there's a lot of things going on. We share a project in Hokoniemi, in Paasivarankatu 3, which we'll talk about more a bit later on. But first, I'd like to get to know you a bit better. Was it always clear that you would work in creative field?
No,
no.
I really didn't want to. I think as a kid I was always drawing, and I think I was drawing and telling myself stories while drawing. It was just sort of visualizing what I was thinking. But I grew up with a photographer father, and it was very clear to me that I did not want his life. I wanted like a safe, solid. I wanted income. So I sort of very early on made the decision not to be creative. And I actually studied art history before I even went into design. I was thinking that it was sort of the academia way into the arts.
Nice. And where did you study?
I studied in Denmark at Aarhus University.
Okay. It does sound to me as if you were quite creative child, and perhaps you were encouraged to do that. That's the problem when I have creative people in the studio and I ask them to tell about their background or explain their approach to things. They always tell me that, well, the work sort of speaks for itself. But now it's nice to reflect on some of the decisions that have led you here anyway. But how did you end up in Helsinki? And how did you end up as the creative director of Marimekko?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Marimekko sort of picked me. I've been working sort of in London and New York for the majority of my career. And at one point, I think I was in New York at the time, I actually received a call from Mika, the chairman of Marimekko, just inviting me casually to visit Helsinki. And I just happened to have those days free and accepted the invitation, because of course I have known Marimekko my entire life. I've grown up with Marimekko as a kid. I have all these references, and also I think in my professional life I clearly remember the first time I sort of took note of the what's the real quality of Marimekko. So when he extended the invitation, I was like, I can meet Marimekko, I can come to Helsinki for the first time. I'm a huge Alva Aalto fan. So it was sort of checking all the boxes. So that was really my very first visit at Marimekko, which later became a position of the board of directors at Marimekko, which later became me swapping that or exchanging that with this role as creative director when I decided to move back to Europe from New York 4 years ago.
And what were you doing in New York?
In New York, I was my last role was I was heading up the Global Innovation Center for Uniqlo. So I was spending my time between New York and Tokyo. Prior to that, I was head of product for Everlane, the direct-to-consumer radical transparency startup, and splitting my time between New York and San Francisco. There's a pattern here.
Yeah, okay, that's my next question.
But I came to New York to be the vice president, global creative director for The Gap, which is, of course, like one of the largest American retailers.
How did living in New York affect your work or your approach?
I think living in New York pretty did not affect my approach. But working for these like super large companies, I think there's a lot of experiences that have formed who I am today as a creative director. I think I came to New York as this very European, you know, really believing that you can lead with creativity and that processes can be quite intuitive and organic. And then I arrived at The Gap and I had a design team of like 200 individuals. I was overseeing all product lines. And the whole, I think, American corporate life is very different than even in an apparel company. It is very corporate. It's extremely political. I think I really learned the hard way the role of the merchant or merchandising. So I think it was, you know, in hindsight, I think it was actually a bit of a shock to my entire belief system in what it needs to be a creative or creative director. I think the other big difference is that I think historically in Europe, a creative director will oversee all touch points of a brand, not just the product, but also, you know, what is the presence in windows, activations or campaigns. But in these like large American brands, as a creative director, you oversee a portion of the brand. But so that was the first big learning. The next, and I always try to move from one learning to the next. I really try to avoid repetition, or I would like to take something away every time. So then after Gab, I joined Everlane, which was my first direct-to-consumer brand to ever work for, and also suddenly entering into an organization where design, when we referred to design, it was the UX designers, it was the user experience designers, and half of the employees were engineers. So it's a very different way of working. It's a very different way of thinking. And I learned so much. And I think this is probably what has influenced how I work today the most. I really learned to think in consumer-facing messages and identifying whether something is big or a big idea needed to be treated that way, or whether something is just nice but not that impactful. So I think a lot of that methodology is how I approach even, you know, new seasons or collections or activations today.
Well, that's very interesting. So you've also, which is something I know of you, that you are not a designer yourself. You studied art history. Is there still some processes that you always make use of, or some methodologies that you would use in your daily life on your projects?
I am actually a designer.
You're a designer.
I dropped out of art history, and then first I did a fine tailoring course, and then I have a fashion education from design school in Denmark.
Okay.
But I don't think of myself as a designer, and I think that's the I think that's what you're picking up on here. And I don't think of myself a designer because I have always been more intrigued with the process than the product. I think for a very, very long time, I really didn't care about the end result of anything. But I'm really intrigued with the process and the communication. So even all the way back when I started art history, I just really wanted to communicate. It was not art history as such. It's just you need to do that if you want to be a curator or work for galleries. So it's always been the sort of how to pick up on the zeitgeist and process that in a way that can be communicated to create relevance and desirability.
That's also, well, this I can relate to, and I think this is integral for many of us working within this field. However, that can be quite tiring to keep your senses open and stay curious to the world and see, you know, take so much in. You said you used to draw when you were a child. How do you organize your thoughts and all these new ideas today?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm making notes.
I don't think I have any you know, anything that will sort of solve the mystery of how to stay organized. I think I am by nature just like hyper curious. And I think I'm by nature someone who connects well. And I have this like strong intuition, which leads to you know, meeting people or trusting my own instinct or being confident in my decision making. I think that's maybe for me what's really what makes it possible is that this sounds so bad. I'm really convinced when I make decisions. I'm really convinced that I'm making the right decisions. But of course, that is informed by, you know, a lot of information and knowledge. And I'm really, really interested in culture and arts, and I'm really I read a lot, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of music, and I see a lot of exhibitions. But I'm also, I think, with time, I have worked in fashion for 25, 30 years now. I think with time, I have also become much better at not having FOMO. There's a lot of things I also don't listen to and don't read and don't see. And that's fine. Then I trust that someone will let me know if it's something I should be paying attention to.
And confidence from experience, of course. Are you good at relaxing?
Yeah. I would say I'm good at... I have activities that relax me. So let's say, what does it mean to relax? I think to some... I'll ask you afterwards what's your way. But I think to some, to my husband, relaxing is sitting in the sofa doing absolutely nothing. To me, relaxing is running or hiking, cooking. I think that's how I relax. I don't really know how to sit in a sofa and do nothing.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, for me, cooking as well, time, it's my way of organizing my thoughts and being present. But yeah, many people have, because I don't know, for me it seems like you sort of have got it quite fixed and organized. You seem like, you know, you're living a good life that also brings you joy in everyday life.
Yeah.
And you find those things.
Yeah, and I think I'm not, I think the, I'm not really, for me there's no difference in work or non-work, and I think that's actually what makes it work. Yeah, I think that it is also finding, and thank you for using a Marimekko quote. It is bringing joy to everyday life. It's one of my favorite quotes, because I think you can also be concerned with bringing joy to your own life, and by doing that, bringing joy to other people.
Yeah, find meaning in that. This show is Helsinki Design Weekly, and my name is Annie Korkman, and today in the studio with me I have Rebecca Bay. We talked a bit about your previous career, and there was still something I wanted to ask, as you know, it's nice to give credit to things and people and maybe reflect back and see some patterns or important moments. And I wonder, is there an experience in your career that has like massively affected on where you are today? Is there probably maybe like a person or a phase, a project, or even a piece of work that would have significantly impacted on your views or expression?
Yeah, I think there's many.
Few, I would say.
There's a few, but maybe I can do two.
Yep.
Yeah. The first one being, so actually, so I have a degree in fashion, but I didn't really want to work in fashion. So I worked in trend forecast for sort of the first couple of years, many years actually of my career. And I worked for this big brand agency in London, Fitch. And I sort of approached them. I was like, hey, my name is Rebecca. I think you need a trend forecaster. they did not have that as part of the services at the time. But I really saw that they were really good with design strategy, planning. And I felt I was in fashion trend forecast at the time. I really felt that we needed to shift gear, because all future forecast was based on these like short seasons in fashion, and we started to work much more with automotive and tobacco and food and beauty. So I pitched them that I would come work for them to help them better understand the future. And they, I still don't know to this day. I was like, so I ended up interviewing with their creative director and the CEO.
And when was this, sorry?
This was my first real job.
So you were quite young.
Oh, I was young and I didn't know.
How did you have the confidence?
Because you
I
didn't
know. but also because I think, as I said, I think this sense of sort of this conviction mm-hmm. has always been there. So I approached them and they actually hired me. And because I was a new hire with a new subject, I ended up reporting directly into the career director, which is very unique when you're in your first job. And I think him, I would need to give kudos to him. Tim Greenhawk. It was real laddish organization. Okay, there's a lot of male designers.
Yeah.
We would do big projects like airports and wayfinding projects and British American Tobacco. It was also during the time of the ban on tobacco advertising. So we did a lot of how to then create activations around brands. So I worked with him. And I reported directly into him. And he gave me so much space to figure out what my role was in that company. And he had so much faith in my ability to navigate and figure it out. And he invited me in on most of his projects. And he made me pitch to clients very early, and I would travel with him and the other lads everywhere in the world. And I think now I can see how much guidance he actually gave me. At the time, I at times I felt lost and lonely and mocked and everything. But to this today, I can see how good he was at both creating space and direction at the same time. So really, you know, for that, I'm really grateful.
Do you keep in touch?
Yeah, the way you do professionally. I had a coffee with him a few years back, which was really funny. And he was like, you are exactly the same person, which is really nice. I think that it was actually a real compliment because I started out, you know, super junior. I really had to learn my weight and also fight my way up.
Yeah.
And then when I met him, I was a vice president, creator director. And he was like, but you are the same. That was nice. Really nice. And then I think the other I think real enabler of me developing as a career director was I helped H&M start COS back in London in 2005. And my managing director at the time, first of all, they hired me. I had never designed a collection, and they hired me as design director for women's. And I think my managing director gave me so much time and space to figure out what my vision was for the brand. And I think she was extremely patient. And I think she was also fending off a lot of people who wanted me to just design a collection. And instead, I think she created this space for me to really figure out what it was all about before designing anything. So I really identified, like, this is the color of the brand. This is the sound of the brand. This is spatial design for this brand. And then I designed a collection. And I think she continued to have a lot of trust in my instinct, you know. So I think she also really carved out a super, super nice space for me during those years.
Oh, that's really nice to hear. I think it's nice to give credit. Well, it's unlikely that these two people mentioned are listening.
Yeah.
but it's really nice to name people who have supported us and helped us all along the way. Because these can be super meaningful things when the timing is right.
Yeah. And I think it's probably also something you recognize, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've also had some like guidance and support and... Yeah, I've been working with my father for many years and with other characters. I still like almost, well, if not daily, I think of some like teachers or lecturers or tutors during my studies who've really like, given me some direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there some, this might be a bit too vague, but I wonder if there is like a project that you could name that you've seen and been like super impressed and thought, oh, this is the kind of things I would also like to do.
Dear Beacon.
Yeah.
I think Dear Beacon as a project with all the site specific artworks. No, actually I want to say
if you have to tell to the listeners.
Yeah, Dear Beacon is a modern art museum north of New York, and they have most of the, if not all, the art is site specific. It's a former factory industrial building just on the Hudson River. Really beautiful. And they have these like massive spaces, and they have Dan Flavins, they have Solivit, they have Agnes Martin, they have Jord, Donald Jord. And I think that's also my reason for that is they are among some of my favorite artists. Mm-hmm. And I think especially, you know, the first name that came to mind when you asked me like a project that I really admire, then the project Donald Jord is probably what I admire the most. Someone who is an artist, a writer, who turns his practice into also furniture pieces, who takes on buildings, who creates a foundation, who cares for the craft of things, who I think someone with strong conviction on how to live. And if you've ever read any of his writings, he has very strong convictions also about like how to sit or where to sit when you look at a piece of art. And I think he's an amazing curator of spaces. The Jord Foundation has this building on 101 Spring Street in New York, which is where Jord and his family lived up till the, I think, early 70s. And you really get a sense of, you know, of his practice and his conviction in everything he's ever done. So for me, that is. If I can call that a project, that is probably one of the projects that I find most aspirational.
No, that's a great example, and you explaining it in that way makes us also maybe realize why you've chosen it. Talking about curation, I started to look for a quote that I wanted to say, but I couldn't. It's a live show. But we are working tonight with Paola Antonelli, who is the curator in New York too, in MoMA. And she'll be giving a keynote presentation tonight at Paasivuorenkatu 3 at 6:30. It's free entry, by the way, so I suggest you come early. And the venue is something that we've been working with together. It's the bar Unikko at Helsinki Design Week's main venue. And the reason why we're there is that Unikko is turning 60. Visionary Marimekko designer is Maija Isola, and I wonder what could we learn from Maija Isola.
I think there's a lot we could learn from Maija Isola. I think what I'm taking away from Maija Isola is really that she did not take no for an answer. So I don't know if everyone is aware. I think we all recognize an Unikko. I think it's almost the symbol of Marimekko at times. I think sometimes being confused with that. So what I think is so beautiful about Unikko is that it is both a flower, but it's also an abstraction over a flower or the idea of a flower. And I see that in a lot of her work, this ability to be in a space where things can be literal and abstract at the same time. And actually, when Unikko was crafted 60 years ago, Armi Ratia, our Marimekko founder, did not want any floral prints in the collection because she found that florals were more beautiful in the natural element. And I love the, I don't know if it is a rebellious spirit or whether it's just, sorry, I will prove you wrong. And I think there's a lot in that. It's like that we should not be so scared of doing things with the possibility of failing. I think what's the worst thing that can happen?
Exactly. And maybe challenge the brief every now and then. There is a lot of Unikko around the world in Marimekko's history and from there also in like Finnish design history. I have to ask, is there such thing as too much Unikko?
I think everyone thought that there was such a thing as too much Unikko, but I think this year, where we have celebrated Unikko's 60th anniversary, there is not such a thing as too much Unikko. I think I think that's the abstract value that I'm talking about with Unikko. You can really do so much. You can make it very intangible or very tangible, or very literal, very abstract or conceptual. I think we kicked off the year with the Lux Helsinki, where we created a light installation. I think Unikko can take so many shapes and forms. So I don't think there's too much. I think you just need to continue to figure out how to challenge Unikko.
Yeah, yeah. And the one way we are celebrating Unikko is the bar that Marimekko launched in collaboration with Appartamento during Salone, the Milan Design Week in April. And now we at Helsinki Design Week are super proud to have the new version, the Helsinki version of the bar as our main venue this year. So together with Let Me Wine, we put together a bar which is open today from 4, as well as tomorrow on Friday, and on Saturday is the final day. Is there something that you would like people to notice when they come to the space, especially?
No, I think with that bar especially, I think it is all about discovery. Mm. I love that, of course, the theme for Helsinki Design Week is underneath. And I think what everyone will notice when entering the space is that the bar is placed underneath a great artwork. So I think that will not go unnoticed, but I think the space is really around sort of exploring the tactility. What does it mean when we use especially printed textiles for sort of spatial design? I think a lot, I joined the opening night at the bar, and thank you for giving us this opportunity. During the opening night, and a lot of people sort of shared with me, oh, we thought we would see something exactly like Bar Unikko in Milan. But the whole point here is, of course, that Bar Unikko is an abstract idea. It's a concept, and we can translate that in many different ways. And in everything we do, we should always want to create a connection with the space we're in, or the event we are participating in, or the audience that we want to attract.
The artwork that Rebecca was referring to is a glass work in the space by Urpa Vainio, which is in the space. It's an old banking hall. And Rebecca also mentioned the theme for Helsinki Design Week this year, which is underneath. And the space also represents it quite well. It's a very, it's not like a classic beauty. The house itself, it's very early 80s, an office building, something that you might pass by and be overlooked. And yet now when you enter, we've sort of changed the space quite a bit, but then also highlighted the structure and the existing. I recommend everyone listening joining us in Bar Unikko during the next few days. But now I think it's time for some more music. Helsinki Design Weekly for another 15 minutes or so. My name is Anni, of course, and today with me I have Rebecca Bay from Marimekko. We've been talking about Bar Unikko. We've been talking about your education, your hobbies and inspiration. I would like to talk more about Helsinki, as it's Radio Helsinki. It's Helsinki Design Weekly. It's something I'm also curious to hear about people's experiences in the city. You've lived in New York, in Tokyo, San Francisco, Copenhagen. What kind of things have you noticed in Helsinki whilst you've been living here?
So it's really interesting. I sort of spent my time between Copenhagen and Helsinki. And even though I think actually culturally we have a lot of similarities, Danes and Finns, maybe even more than the other Nordics. Now, with the danger of the other Nordics being upset, but I think I also think we have similar humor. We Danes don't have the same melancholic as the Finns, but I think the for me coming to Helsinki is always like taking a deep breath. I think of course the city is beautiful. I really appreciate the architecture. There's like mix of brutalism and I think you see these like almost like Ottoman like influences. I think it's really I have a small apartment in Eira where the architecture is also very different from Danish functionalism. Yes. So I think this being on the water, no matter where you go in my early days in Helsinki, I would always get lost because I would walk down the street and it's like, no, sorry, the water is now behind me, but it's also in front of me. So I think there's something, you know, I think Helsinki is an extremely livable city.
Yes. Which also sounds a bit boring.
But it is also a little quiet here Monday nights after six. But of course, I think you have, on my very first visit, the one when Mika had invited me to Helsinki, I visited the Design Museum and the Museum of Architecture. Mm-hmm. And the Museum of Architecture had an exhibition with Aalto and Aalto's relationship with architecture and nature. And for me, that informs everything in Helsinki. I think the food scene, I think, it has this relation between the controlled and the organic. I think the... Actually, I was about to say that I haven't been out. I haven't been to the opera here, or I haven't.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, I know.
But do you know the building?
I know the building, of course. I visited a lot of the more iconic buildings and the museums. We try at Marimekko to work with the museums. We had a presentation at Kiasma. Mm. We will now be working with Amorex, actually. So I think a really, you know, also really interesting art scene, which is both very local and very global. And maybe that's actually my take on Helsinki. I think Helsinki is more local than most of the other cities that I spent my time in. I think there's a real pride in what it means to be Finnish and what it means to be sort of referencing Finnish design and Finnish culture. But I also see this curiosity towards the rest of the world.
Mm. I think there could be even, like from my perspective, there could be even more curiosity towards the rest of the world. However, also some like pride in what we do here in Helsinki. You mentioned Architecture and Design Museum, funnily enough, tonight and this afternoon. We're working together with them as well as we present some program on stage of Bar Unikko at Paasivuoren Katu 3. And one of the speakers of today will be Paola Antonelli, who's been brought to Helsinki by our friends at the new Architecture and Design Museum, which is obviously the new design museum and architecture museum project is something that we're very much looking forward to and everyone are talking about it. My colleague Elena Sulin, who I work with for Helsinki Design Weekly newsletter, she asked Paola Antonelli if design events and festivals still have a role in distributing knowledge and influencing people's attitudes towards design and creativity. And she actually said something that now I was reminded of when you talk about Helsinki being both local and global at the same time, is that something that festivals... in order to continue being relevant, we should be focused on either a topic that highlights design's role in the local community or on topics that are universal and cut across all cultures. And this is something that really resonates with me as we plan the Helsinki Design Week of the future. And I would like to take this back on your thoughts on Helsinki. What kind of design festival you think Helsinki should have?
Oh, that's a big question coming from you, I think. I think so of course this year already I've already attended Milan Design Week, mm-hmm. and I attended 3 days of design in Copenhagen. I think then there's this one, and then if I want to go to Miami, I could probably do that. I think Helsinki Design Week, it's my first. Mm. And I'm really excited that we are engaging with the week, or engaging at least with Bar Unikko. I think Helsinki Design Week has an opportunity to, now you will get direct feedback on radio, sorry, but have an opportunity to open more up to the world. I feel at times as a non-Finnish speaker excluded here. Mm. It is strange to be in a space and everyone speaks Finnish or on stage or crack jokes in Finnish. You actually feel excluded. And I think it's difficult to understand when you are in the language or in the culture, but it is weirdly excluding when you're not. And I think so much is in, of course, a lot of culture is in language and language is in culture. But I think Helsinki Design Week could attract a larger global audience if it decided to be more global or open up more. I think it's sort of a disconnected experience because you have a lot of amazing events. I think also it's a very democratic design week in the best possible manner. But then it's not democratic when you're excluding someone just because they don't manage the language, for example.
Mm. Yeah, I do get your point. And I suppose looking at the festival with its own media, we do tend to plan quite carefully to be bilingual as possible, because we also see value in having conversations, which now sounds stupid because I'm saying this in English, but it does have value to talk about design topics with our Finnish language, because, yeah, we want to keep some of the vocabulary and some of the ideas relevant also in the Finnish discourse, as language is everywhere around us. But you're absolutely right. I think we should be open up more. We should be more open as a festival, as a city, as a nation. Thinking about Finnish design, personally, I don't even, you know, I have a master's design, so maybe I can say I'm a designer, but I don't know if I'm a Finnish designer as such, because I trained abroad. I always worked with international projects. What's the relevance? What's the point in narrowing something to be only Finnish or only something Helsinkian? And yet there has to be value and purpose in having local communities and work within them.
But I think you can do both.
Yeah,
I think you can also
balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah. Protect the integrity in something while still opening it up. Mm-hmm. I actually think the more confident you are in what you do and in the value of what you do, the more you can open it up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I wanted to talk about design itself as well, but now we started talking about Helsinki and we started talking about festivals. To close that conversation, I wonder if you have some places or things or events that you always want to visit or that you bring your friends to when they visit Helsinki.
I have many. I have a whole list I have made for my friends.
I can actually imagine you having a list.
Yeah, I have a list. I think on my list is always a visit to LL's studio and home. I also think I love when I have a guided tour.
Yeah, me too.
So that's always on the list. Visiting the Kulturi sauna, I think, is a must when in Helsinki. Yeah. I think Savoy as an institution that's also on my list, but you cannot come too often. I think there's just so much butter. But it's a beautiful space.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Then, of course, I mean, if people have an opportunity to go to Lonne or Simulina, I think it's really, there's also something in looking in on a city from the water. Or go to Nuksia for a hike. And then I send them to Mad District for like easy dinners, yes, or Way Bakery, or I think I'm spending enough time here now to sort of have a good sense of what's also interesting when visiting, you know, how do you get a sense of Helsinki? And I really try to give visitors a sense of what is, where we coming from in design in Finland, and also where we heading.
Yes. So these are nice tips, and I can also, from between the lines, I can hear that you have quite a nice everyday life, both in Helsinki and in Copenhagen. However, there are many contradictions and also real problems in the world of design. What would you say to someone who would feel that the appreciation for aesthetics or the way things look like and all outward appearances has gone too far, and that people should think more carefully about how much time they spend making their homes beautiful or dressing well?
Yeah, it's sort of, even the question has so many contradictions, doesn't it? I actually believe that good design can make people's life better. I strongly believe that being connected with good quality, and good quality is also in design, in form, in material, can make people's life better. I think we can surround ourselves with less. I think we have a tendency to fall in love too often and fall out of love too often. I think we could be more considerate or careful. I think we could demand more from design, and I think designers can demand more of themselves. I think sound like I'm really, really old, but when I started in design, no one spoke about sustainability or circularity or the recyclability or the afterlife of something. And design was very disconnected from material or make or, you know, it was like this weird vacuum where if you were a designer, you just sit and sketch your ideas and someone would need to figure it out. I think design today is starting with first and foremost thinking, you know, how will this bring meaning or joy? How can I do this in a better way? You know, what are the measures I can take as a designer to make sure that this, what I do creates less waste, or I use less virgin materials, or I think the afterlife into my design. I think it's actually more interesting to be a designer today, because I think there's it's much harder. It's a lot less about the aesthetics, but it's also about all these other considerations that you need to have.
The process and everything behind it. It is indeed an inspiring time to be a designer and also to talk about design. However, our time for today is coming to its end. But the conversation continues at Bar Unikko at Paasivaarankatu 3. We're open until Saturday from 4 until quite late, I would say. We end with a song, which is also chosen by you, Rebecca Bay. It's Nene Cherry, Sassy. And quickly, why?
Nene Cherry was, I think, the first female hip-hop artist that sort of shaped my thinking that, you know, that there are literally no rules and you can go out and you can be. I think she broke through when she was very pregnant in this gold lamé top. And I think she's everything. She's connecting all the dots of the world, all the industries. I think she's an amazing collaborator. She's worked across so many different genres with a lot of different musicians that I admire. And then it's also, I'm also sort of putting it out there to the world. I would love to do something with Nene Cherry for Marimekko. So if anyone knows her,
maybe she's listening.
Or if she's listening, then I would love to jump on a call.
This was from Rebecca Bay. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the song.